Welcome to the second part of our third program in the series Our Lady Speaks Today. The following is a recording of an unrehearsed discussion in a Blue Army cell meeting of the meaning of the events in Eastern Europe in the early 90s. Is this the beginning of the triumph of the Immaculate Heart of Mary?
Do you consider what's happening over in Europe now an answer to the prayers of Fatima?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That this Jim, is a sign of hope. Like Poma.
That's right.
Like Poma. Our Lady is giving us the encouragement. The conversion of Russia is in progress. It's in progress.
And it's happened at a snap of a finger. Just overnight.
Overnight, following the collegial consecration. Within a few months of ecclesial consecration, of course, we bring this out in the program.
That's the miracle of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see that I've been writing quite a few letters here, and one of the reasons I've been writing to a lot of people is to share the joy of one experience in this Eastern development, and that is Czechoslovakia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old Bishop of Fatima stared and was in his wheelchair, and he suddenly had been dozing. He suddenly sat up and he said to the Bishop Anuncio, his auxiliary, he said, "Bishop, let's take the statue of Our Lady and carry it behind the Iron Curtain." And Bishop Anuncio told me later, after he became bishop, he succeeded the old man. He said, "I had to smile to myself because I had an image of me pushing the wheelchair and the old bishop holding the statue of Our Lady, and we pushed it beyond the Iron Curtain." That's what happened.
It did happen.
When we took, in 1967, following the visit of the Pope to Fatima in May, in October we had our first world flight, taking pilgrim virgin statues to 25 nations. And the one that went behind the Iron Curtain was to Prague.
And when the plane took off from Berlin, the statue was standing in the front of the plane. Just as we were about to leave, the captain ordered the statue secured somewhere in the back, and Bishop Anuncio, seated in the first row, said, "Well, give her to me." And the image of the Queen of the World flew across the Iron Curtain in the arms of the Bishop of Fatima, seated in a chair. Incidentally, this flight fulfilled a prophecy of St. Catherine Laboure. And we keep saying in this program how there is a sequence of events that they're all tied together from the becoming of Our Lady in 1830, when the ideas of militant atheism and Marxism were being launched. There was a sequence in finding a climax at Fatima, and St. Catherine Laboure made this prophecy. She said, "Oh, how wonderful it will be to hear Mary hailed Queen of the World. She will be carried like a banner and make a tour of the world." And incidentally, when we were traveling, I was actually speaking in many places or interpreting for the bishop, we actually likened the statue, not knowing about the prophecy of St. Catherine, we likened the statue to a flag. We said, we don't honor the piece of wood. We honor what it stands for. It stands for the Mother of God, the Queen of the World, just as you don't honor a piece of cloth which represents your country. You honor the flag because it represents the country. So, everything about the Pilgrim Virgin, of course, is so marvelous and so extraordinary that we could have a whole six-hour program just on that. But St. Catherine added another prophecy. She said that when the Queenship of Mary will be recognized, there will come a time of peace, joy, and prosperity which will last long. And Our Lady, who appeared as a queen at Fatima, and who set forth, the Pope said, "I crowned her queen at Fatima through the Pilgrim Virgin. She went forth as though to claim her dominion." And appearing as a queen of Fatima, what was Our Lady's promise? An era of peace for mankind, a triumph, the triumph of her heart. And when the Queen of the World plane landed in Prague, a full, complete, glorious rainbow filled the sky over the tarmac of the airport. but the airport was deserted. As we were soon to learn, the communists knew the power of Our Lady of Fatima, and while they did not want to create adverse propaganda by refusing to let the peace flight land, they had a plan to immobilize us and to prevent us from going anywhere or doing anything during our stay. They took us to the center of the city, had all the baggage unloaded in a large square, and then sent the buses away.
And they said, now one group's going to go that way, two blocks to a hotel, the other group will go this way. And I said, well, when will we get the buses back? They said, tomorrow when you go to the airport. They were going to prevent any possible meeting or doing of anything in the city. We'd have no transportation. And of course, our purpose was to go to see Archbishop Tomaszek and give him the statue. So I immediately, seeing what was happening, I had a loudspeaker with me, and we were a big group, 125 people. And you know, 120 people, about 200 bags piled in the middle of the square, a mountain of bags. So I said to the group, let's stay right here in the square until the buses come back. We'll say the rosary. Oh, I asked the bishop first, and he readily agreed. We put the statue of Our Lady as though on a pyramid on top of all the luggage, and we all gathered around. This is in a main square of Prague. And we started the rosary, and at each decade the bishop sang in Portuguese the Ave Maria Fatima. There were 15 stanzas between each decade with the microphone. And the Czech people came up and said, you can't do this, you can't stay here. And they, you know, with asserting the authority that would frighten the local people. And we said, we're staying here until the buses come back. They go off and make phone calls and come back. We went through the whole first Joyful Mysteries of the Rosary and all this agitation. Meanwhile, the word's going all through the city of Prague. There's a bishop there in the square with a statue of Our Lady of Fatima. They're saying the rosary, and the Czech people won't give them transportation. Sorrowful Mysteries of the Rosary all the way through. Nothing's happening, no buses. We had just finished the glorious mysteries and the buses came. Four big buses. So I told the people, get on the buses. So they all climbed on the buses and the luggage is all there. It's getting dark. So I said to the bus driver, fortunately I knew some German, I didn't know any Czech, and they knew a lot of German there. That we wanted to go up on the top of the mountain for a view of the city, because he knew very well. That was the Archbishop's residence. I knew because I'd been there before. So the buses take off, and the guides are there in the square. The guides are left behind. And they are yelling to us, you know, that we can't go and so on. So I said to him, well, you have to look after the luggage. So see, and otherwise the drivers would never have followed our directions. They would have always done what the guides did. But we would have the drivers and the Czech drivers, you know, and to ourselves. We go up on the mountain, and there, it's just getting dark. And I knew roughly where the bishop's house was, but I didn't know what door to knock on. But there was a bell outside, you know, like you have a school bell? It was a big bell with a rope on it. I've got to ring this bell. I rang the bell, and suddenly a door opened, and there was the Archbishop. It was really, really, really like a miracle. And the Archbishop invited us in. We had no Czech guides with us at all. And the Archbishop took us upstairs to his private chapel, and he had been educated in Rome as had Bishop Venazio. They spoke perfectly together in Italian, which I understood. And the Archbishop was so moved. It was tears in his eyes and his voice when he looked at Our Lady's statue, and there was this presence of Our Lady in the Bilgenberg. And he said to Bishop Venazio, he said, I don't believe that there is a house in Czechoslovakia where the rosary is not said and the people look to Our Lady of Fatima and to her promise. He said, we are bearing a cross, but in the cross there is victory, and you have brought us the sign of the victory. Oh, I wish I could repeat it the way it was said. I wish we'd had a recording there at that time. And then I wanted to take the statue to the Church of Our Lady of Prague so that the two statues could meet, you know, the her child behind the iron curtain. Because the most famous statue of an infant of Jesus in the world. But the Archbishop was very concerned about us taking the statue out. And if he had told us not to, we wouldn't have done. But I said, Oh, Excellency, we'll get it back to you tomorrow. And so he reluctantly conceded, and we went through. Now it was getting dark, and we came to the big church where the statue of the infant was, and it was all dark. Nobody there. And I went back in, and back then I knew there must be switches somewhere, and there's real old-fashioned switches. I knew what to put on. And you know what? I was putting switches on that were lighting lights and things in the rectory and all over the place. And then pretty soon, people began to come. You know, it was really strange. 1967. And we took the statue of the Pilgrim Virgin into the chapel of the Miraculous Infant of Prague, and there the bishop and all of our priests, I think we had 8 or 9 priests, at mass together. And little by little, that whole church began to fill with the Czech people. An organist began to play. And then the next day, we got the statue, with difficulty, we got the statue back to the archbishop. Now, why that story is so significant now is this. I wasn't as surprised as seeing the Berlin Wall come down as I was surprised at the revolution in Czechoslovakia. Because 2 months after the Pilgrim Virgin had gone to Prague, you had the Czech Spring. Dubček came to power, remember? Just 2 months after, and it started with a religious thing. And immediately after that, the Russians came with enormous force and tanks and crushed it, and they left a major military force in Czechoslovakia. See, that was their major force. If something happened to Germany or something happened to the neighboring countries, their major force was in Czechoslovakia. And most of the experts were saying that they would never let Czechoslovakia go. They tolerated what happened in East Germany. They tolerated what happened in Poland. But the experts were all saying, and I'm talking about just a month or so ago, they would never let Czechoslovakia go. And look what happened.
Mm-hmm.
All the communists were out.
Just amazing. Just that they killed Ceausescu.
So that was in Romania.
Now
listen to this.
I thought Romania would never come.
2 weeks ago in the New York Times, there was an interview with Cardinal Tomasek. You know, he's a cardinal now, the same archbishop. And he's 90 years old. Now, I want to recall before I tell you this, that in 1972, we distributed the statues in 67, and then little by little, statues were sent to other countries in the world so that all in all, about 50 countries had statues. And then in 72, all the bishops of the world, where the statues were invited to have a coronation of the statue, consecrating their individual countries to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. That was done all over the world. In Washington, the Cardinal in Washington did it. The National Shrine was completely filled. We had the coronation simultaneously on May 13, 1972, all over the world, and the Pope participated. That, again, is written up in my book. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's very interesting. And all the opposition we had on that in Rome,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's very, very interesting. But anyway, Archbishop Tomasek in Prague was going to have the coronation, and the communists knew the power of Fatima. And they put scaffolds up all around the cathedral. They were going to restore the cathedral at this time when the cardinal was going to have this coronation. And despite that, the cardinal went to the cathedral and the crowds overflowed all around and he was then archbishop. And he consecrated Czechoslovakia to the Immaculate Heart and crowned Our Lady statue in conjunction with the Holy Father and the bishops around the world. Now, 3 weeks ago. Now, we're talking in January 1990. The government changed in Czechoslovakia. The man the cardinal recommended was made the president of Czechoslovakia, Havel. And the cardinal was being interviewed, and you know what he said? I never thought I would live to see this day.
Yeah.
And you know what's going to happen next month? The Pope is going to Czechoslovakia. His first visit to any country, in March, their first visit to any country behind the Iron Curtain. After Poland.
He's invited to Russia, too.
Yeah. And can you imagine that joy of Archbishop Tomasek?
Yeah,
but I see what happened in Czechoslovakia as a symbol of the triumph of Our Lady.
Oh, I think.
You know, there is the Pilgrim Virgin, was...
You
know what Pope Pius XII said about the Pilgrim Virgin? He said, I crowned her as Queen of the World of Fatima in 1946, and the following year, through the Pilgrim Virgin, she went forth as though to claim her dominion.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in all these countries.
You said that you didn't think that Russia would ever let Czechoslovakia go, didn't you?
Yes.
But they didn't.
Good thought, you.
They didn't let
her
go.
No, Our Lady took it away.
About the icon of Kazan, when do you expect your return? Were you waiting for them to ask for it?
No, I'll tell you, we We never thought the signs would come so soon, but I said, you know, just suggesting when it might be a time for it to go back, that, of course, when I was in charge, I could have made the decision if the Holy Father agreed. And my thought was that we send it back when one of two things would happen. Either first, they would rebuild the Church of Our Lady of Kazan in Moscow, or they would reconsecrate the Cathedral of Our Lady of Kazan in Leningrad. Mm-hmm. Because that cathedral had become symbolically the world center of militant atheism. It's been turned into not only into an atheistic museum, but they put the printing presses of that magazine, Science and Religion, which is the official militant atheistic magazine with over 500,000 copies, was published there. So the devil really chose, you know, the very place of Our Lady of Kazan to desecrate the cathedral and make it the very center of militant atheism for the world. But if that would be reconsecrated, that would be a sign. They are. Father Miller, who took my place just a couple of months ago, met with the Metropolitan of Leningrad to discuss this fact, because they are considering turning the cathedral back to the church and reconsecrating it now.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
That's just
great. You mentioned about how what was happening today in Eastern Europe, it was a symbol of the triumph of the Our Lady's Immaculate Heart. By symbol, do you mean that you believe that the triumph has thus begun?
It's the first phase. First phase of the triumph. But the triumph of the Immaculate Heart of Mary will only come with the era of peace.
If what?
The era of peace.
That's important for to be explained to people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, that I think is confuses a lot of people.
Yeah. We don't have the era of peace right now. We have wars all over the world, mm-hmm. and they're surfacing more and more. Mm-hmm. The deep hatreds, mm-hmm. nationalistic hatreds, and because of that, you have the Philippines, you have Lebanon, you have, did you know in Peru, 10,000 people were killed in the civil war in the last decade. Mm-hmm. Well, almost 2,000 last year. Mm-hmm. And you don't hear about a lot of these places. And all that strife in Africa.
But do you think before there was an era of peace that there will be one religion, like it was apparently predicted in the Bible, that eventually we will have one religion, the conversion of all people to, for instance, Christianity, Catholicism?
Gee, I wouldn't know. What do you think, Stacia?
I don't know what to think, but I tell you, I was amazed when we were in Egypt, and one of the mosques, they had a picture of the Blessed Lady and child. We were just astonished to see that.
You didn't know that Mohammedans believe in Our Lady. They believe in the Immaculate Conception.
They do?
Yeah.
They do believe. Oh, I didn't
really?
Know that. I didn't know that. It was a huge picture. And there were lots of women sitting there.
What do you think, Jim, about the possibility of the year of peace, meaning also?
One shepherd and one flock?
One shepherd and one flock. Now,
in the book, the poem of the man God, when they were talking to Jesus about the, will they all become one faith again? And he says, yes, there will be that day.
Yeah.
And the last one will be Israel. It will come in.
That's right. That's where
I heard
that too. I read that too. Mm. Don't you feel like when Father Chizik's book, He Leadeth Me, where suffering brought people closer to God, and what people endured to receive Jesus in the Holy Eucharist, and how what's happening throughout the world today, doesn't it seem very likely that we may very well have to experience the chastisement to really be brought close to our Lord as He wants us to be? Because right now, even though we have problems throughout the world, we're still very apathetic in many ways. Even good Christians really miss the mark at times. It seems like it's only through real suffering, prolonged suffering, that the people are brought down to their knees to realize that God is in charge and that our wills have to be subjected to His if we're really going to make the road the way He wants us to go.
About whether we need the chastisement to come to our senses. The way Our Lady's speaking of this chastisement, I'm afraid there's only going to be a remnant left. And
a what?
A remnant.
Right, very few people.
Because she's talking about, she said it will be worse than a deluge. There are certain things we know about the chastisement from other revelations. From Naju, which is pretty well approved, there hasn't actually been a pastoral letter issued, but the Archbishop of Gwangju has said that he believes in the miracle, he believes in the normalcy of the visionary and so on. So it has a lot of church approval. And in after one of the visions of Our Lady, she called her spiritual director and asked, what was a nuclear war and what was the deluge? See, she had been a convert, mm-hmm. and she didn't know all these terms in the Bible. And apparently from that we gather that the punishment will be like greater than the deluge, and will but a nuclear holocaust. It will be a nuclear holocaust. That, you know, just a couple of small nations getting off enough bombs to do what J. Rand McNally says, causing a nuclear holocaust or a chain reaction that will destroy much of the world. She said it, but Our Lady says specifically fire over the earth.
But it couldn't be averted, though.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Of course it can be averted. Of course it can. That's why Our Lady said a Fatima in order to prevent this.
Then in line with that, the AIDS epidemic, all the things that are going on, we're experiencing a drought. A lot of people don't put a lot of emphasis on that. But if it goes on much longer, we're going to have a serious water problem. Could these things be coming our way to bring us back around to God and His merciful way telling us, come back to me, listen to what I'm saying through Our Lady, so that further problems will be averted, such as the chastisement?
Do you think AIDS, take as an example, do you think AIDS has wakened anybody up to pray more?
Do I think?
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
I think Father Collins, who has been with these boys, will tell you that. He brings back these boys to the church.
Yeah.
And he's literally burying them himself and caring for them. It's just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you think that these individual chastisements are really awakening people?
Oh, yes. Yes, I can see it where I work, John, you know, for Poverello. And I can see the people I work with who are gay, who are now going to church and never went to church before. And I think that's through Father Collins. You know, he's really working on them.
Well, there it comes down to an individual apostle going to these people,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
Now, it gets back to that we have to be apostles and we have to take advantage of all of the things that are happening, mm-hmm. to shake people up and say, look, we have to change our ways.
Nothing has been mentioned about the 50 million abortions a year throughout the whole world. That must be very offensive to God, and I think can make him more angry. And I don't know how much longer we can hold his hand back. Not us, but Our Lady, because the 50 million souls a year.
Yeah. But there again, you have these pro-life people who are out there and
working
against this. And then
there was a general feeling that perhaps with all these wars throughout the world, with all the animosity that has been under the surface for so long with these various nations that wish to assert themselves, the civil wars with the civil strife, with AIDS, with abortion, that there is a new awakening on the part of many who before were complacent, were not involved. But it seems that more and more people are becoming involved. It is as though Satan, who was pictured to us as a serpent, had been using his poison for so many years lying in the grass, camouflaged and darting out and poisoning. But that now, it's as though Our Lady were crushing his head, and he's writhing, and he's apparent. And all this evil is surfacing and is visible. One of the questions that was discussed was, were there so many sins 20, 30 years ago? Probably
in proportion to the population of the world. There were. We had two world wars, and Our Lady said, war is a punishment for sin. We had abortion before, but it was secret. And we certainly did not have as great an involvement of the laity in Catholic education, in fighting things like abortion, in having the rosary before or after Mass, as a daily communicant traveling. I'm no longer surprised when I go into a church for a daily Mass and find a group remaining after Mass for a rosary, anywhere in the country. Years ago, in my own town, even though we had a convent of sisters for teaching catechism, even though the church was the only one within 5 miles in any distance, I was the only layman at daily Mass. Today, in that same church, there are 20 or 30 people at least every day. And while we lament that we don't hear more about Fatima, realize that more than 20 million people signed the Blue Army Pledge. Just, I think it was 3 years ago, in 1 year, 1 million people signed the pledge in the Philippines. Cardinal O'Hara said, I believe that it is the intention of Our Lady that this message of Fatima is to spread through the church from the people and by the people. And this has been happening. Will it happen on a sufficiently accelerated scale to bring about the era of peace without a chastisement? I'm afraid that most persons to whom I put that question say no. Most of them feel that we will have to have a chastisement. But how many would have thought that within about 2 months we would have seen the Iron Curtain come down and one country in Eastern Europe after the other totally rejecting communism? Nothing is impossible to God. There really are, at this particular juncture in history, two things that Our Lady seems to be saying to us in her words, and by tears and blood at Akita and elsewhere. First of all, I can keep my promise, the triumph of my heart and the era of peace. Just look at Eastern Europe. But unless my children respond more in depth, more than they have, God's justice will require a terrible chastisement, and the chastisement is ready. It is at hand. Those are the very words Our Lady has used. It is ready. It is at hand. So far, we have been able to hold it back. So now the Queen of the World gives us two powerful incentives. The incentive of the chastisement, and the incentive of hope. Ever before us are her wonderful words at Fatima, I am from heaven. If my requests are heard, Russia will be converted, and an era of peace will be granted to Russia, to Lebanon, to Peru, to Angola, to South Africa, to Liberia, to Guatemala, San Salvador. An era of peace will be granted to mankind. And while we have been talking about what we must do, there are things Our Lady can do, and that she will do if enough of us pray. There is the prophecy of a warning. Blessed Anne-Marie Taiji and others have spoken of it. That suddenly all over the world, people will see themselves as God sees them. That the world, which has lost the sense of sin, will suddenly see itself. People will suddenly see their own conscience as God sees them. That is, according to this prophecy. And that could be a means of changing the world. And then, after such a personal, and it's prophesied to be a universal experience, Our Lady can still perform a miracle like the one she performed at Fatima. And now, with the communications we have in the world today, it might have the effect on the world that the miracle the sun had in 1917 on Portugal. The bottom line is, if my requests are heard. Sister Lucia said about the collegial consecration, it will have its effect, but the Blue Army will have much to do. She said because the consecration was late and because this militant atheism, these errors have spread throughout the entire world. The Blue Army will have much to do. My dear friends, let's do it.